From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
I participate in multiple citizen science projects, counting birds with ebird.org and Project Feeder Watch, or hosting national Moth Week events in my local park to see and then report who's flying around in the dark, and more. Citizen science is a participatory effort when non-scientists like myself help collect more observations or data from more locations than scientists could without our help. Besides the feel-good part, you get to learn a lot along the way, too. One project I'm participating in really stands out that way as different. It's called the Habitat Network, a collaboration between Cornell Lab of Ornithology and the Nature Conservancy, and powered by a powerful mapping program called YardMap. YardMap provides a suite of tools that doesn't just help the scientists learn more from your inputs, but actually helps you map and then manage your own home landscape ecologically, to be a better habitat-style gardener, if you will. I invited Dr. Rhiannon Crane, the Habitat Network project manager, to the show today to nudge you all to try yard mapping, too. There's no better time than the start of the off-season, when we gardeners should be reassessing what's still fresh in our minds from this year and planning for enhancements, to think about how to turn up the volume on diversity enhancements in your own garden, which to my mind is the most exciting part anyhow. I'm so glad to get to talk to you, Rhiannon. How are you?
I'm doing really well, and we're really excited to be talking to you too, Margaret.
Yes. Well, you know, I love the Lab of O and all its projects, the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. It's one of my favorite places to visit on the web, and I don't think there's a day that goes by that I don't utilize some one of its many, many, many assets. So,
wow, that's pretty cool to hear from someone. I really enjoy working there as well. It's a spectacular place full of creativity and people just super devoted to conservation and science.
Yes.
It's a delight.
So your, and it's habitat.network is the URL of the Habitat Network, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let's sort of go back to the start of what in the world germinated an idea like this and whoever came up with it in the first place. Was that in around 2013-ish?
It was actually earlier.
Oh.
So for a really long time, people have been calling the lab and they've been, you know, asking questions that you'd expect them to ask. Can you help me identify this bird? What's the best kind of bird seed to be using in my feeders? But there was also another kind of phone call that was happening. People would call and they would want to tell the person who answered all about their yard. And they were looking both for sort of kudos about what they were doing. They wanted to hear, yeah, that's great. We love that. And, wow, I can't believe how devoted you are to helping us care for the wildlife around our urban areas. But they also wanted to know if they were doing the right thing. So they were asking questions like, is that correct? Is my feeder in the right location? Do I have the right plants planted? They wanted answers to that. And we couldn't really provide them. I mean, there's a lot of anecdotal evidence out there about what might work in yards, but we don't have a ton of science about what we call residential ecology. And so for a long time, some researchers at the lab were like, wow, how can we collect really robust data about landscapes and about what works in these backyards so that we can answer these questions in a way that we feel really confident about? And it was hard to imagine a way to do that, right? So sitting down and sort of describing your yard or just checking off a box of checkboxes that tell you what's there just isn't the same as the kind of data you actually need to answer these questions. And as people continue to think about this, Google Maps came online, 2006, I believe, and the world exploded when that happened.
Yeah.
So many more possibilities as people had mapping power suddenly in their hands right on their home computer. That never happened before. It's only 10 years old, but I think it's really difficult to imagine a time before Google Maps. And the way that people interacted with map data was just so different. You had to be an expert in GIS to do it, and now we don't. So we, once that happened, we started exploring ways we could utilize that tool to collect this kind of data. We wrote a couple of grants to NSF One of them got funded in 2009. And so I started work on the project in 2010 at the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. And we've been slowly working towards something really usable for the public since then.
So when I first used the platform, which is now called the Habitat Network, it was a purely Cornell Lab effort, and I think it was just called YardMap then. And this was in 2014, I believe, was when I first used it. And I know you've lately partnered with Nature Conservancy to make it even bigger and better. But I think probably we should help, now that we know how it started, help listeners sort of try to visualize what it means to join and use this platform. So, like, I opened an account, I gave my location, as you just said, the Google Maps sort of like that, you know, earthy kind of view thing. My site was there in front of me, and I kind of made an imaginary fence around it with these tools in the toolbox that you provide me, like a design tool or a mapping, of course, but a design tool. So what else does it do? What do you help me do as a user?
So you've got that right. Once you find that familiar image on Google Maps, you create that fence around your property. You're sort of defining the space that you're going to have stewardship over.
Right.
So the space that you want to be talking about and that you have access to manage. And once you do that, you get to pull open the next set of tools in the toolkit. And those are polygons that you draw over the surface of the map to indicate the different kinds of land type that are there. So there's the familiar things like lawn and pavement to represent driveways and patios and buildings to put on top of your sheds and your houses. And then there's other things like a rain garden polygon if you maintain a space where you specifically are encouraging water to soak back into the ground in your yard, or shrubby areas, or if you happen to be lucky enough to have a large plot and have a forested space, you can indicate that with a polygon. So you're delineating the different spaces in your yard by the kind of land cover type that are there.
Right.
Once you do that, you answer questions about this, because not everything, you know, can be visualized on the map. Sometimes the stuff that matters ecologically is what you're doing in those places. So for every land cover type that you put down, there's questions that you answer about that space, like how often do you irrigate this? How many native plants are part of this area? Do you use any chemicals to either supplement the growth of the plants or to help keep pests away? So those are all important parts of the project as well.
Right. So it's not just the actual physical, there's a tree here, there's a birdhouse over there. It's also this sort of intentional and the practical things that you do or don't do in those spaces, your management methods and philosophy and so forth, that's being, quote, mapped in a way. And so if anyone worries that it'd be like words like polygons and whatever, it sounds like, oh, what does that mean? What does that mean? What, just really simply, you make the outline around your property shape, and then within that, the tools help you make these other shapes, these polygons they happen to be, but these other shapes, and there's objects that you can add to it. You can say, here's a big birch tree, or here's a, you know, a field, an unmown field of little blue stem and goldenrod, you know, this is an unmown area, et cetera. And so, you know, it's interesting because, again, like I said in the introduction, like other citizen science projects that I participate in, most of them ask me to count something, count birds, count moths, identify them, et cetera, and tell when I saw them and where I saw them and what numbers I saw them. But this doesn't really ask me that, but it is connected to some of my other efforts, isn't it? Isn't it kind of layered in technically?
Yeah. So right now we are connected behind the scenes to eBird, which is, as you know, a really popular monitoring project for any bird anywhere. And that comes in handy for keeping track. We display the birds that you've seen if you're reporting to eBird right next to your map. And that's fun for other people because you can peek at somebody else's map and see what birds Margaret's seen recently right there next to her map. Folks really like to do that.
Yeah.
And we hope to start partnering with other projects as they build up the tools that allow us to trade data over the internet securely, called APIs.
Yes.
We really hope to bring in some other data from other popular projects, maybe a butterfly monitoring project or a frog monitoring project. perhaps even some tree stewardship projects that the Nature Conservancy works on, so that you can learn how to steward trees right through the habitat network.
So it has probably other ways that it's different from I counted the number of birds or moths or whatever kind of citizen mm-hmm. science project. What are some of the other ways that it's different?
I mean, and you've sort of hinted at this already. We're interested not just in what's out in nature, but how you are interacting with nature. This is an understudied area. Mm-hmm. It's really a misnomer to think of ecology as something that's separate from people. As we increasingly devote more landscapes to human practices, we call them working landscapes in ecology as opposed to sort of natural landscapes. And these working landscapes are really big. We utilize a ton of the land in our country, and we tend to do it in these really tight clusters. So if your wildlife that's trying to live, say, along the eastern coast, so much of that landscape is people working and living on it, that, you know, how people interact with that landscape is a subject of science in and of itself. And that's okay. What Habitat Network is trying to capture, is that socio-ecological relationship and how to collect data about it.
And I know that you encourage, you don't have to be a rural dweller with a large amount of acres, or even a suburban homeowner. You encourage city dwellers to participate. How many maps and people are participating, and how many acres have been mapped so far?
So well over 20,000 maps are in the database. Mm-hmm. We tend to double the number of maps every 18 months or so. We'll double the number of participants, which is really cool. And that is adding up to something, I think we're getting well over 300,000, maybe approaching 400,000 acres that have been mapped, which is cool.
So I recently interviewed one of your Cornell lab colleagues who'd used data from citizen science to start to really understand bird migration routes better, for instance. But what is the potential benefit when you reach a certain critical mass of inputs from people like myself, however many tens of thousands of users and bazillions of acres? What is it that you're hoping to get out of, you know, to extrapolate? And I know you've spoken to it a little bit, but some more examples of that. What might you
sure.
do with it? Yeah.
So a question we'd love to answer is, across landscapes, does it matter the percentage of native plants that are in somebody's yard for something like whether a nest is successful?
Oh.
So you know that most nesting birds require a pretty steady source of insects in order to feed their young. There's not a lot of seed feeding of baby birds. Most of them eat caterpillars. That's a favorite.
I know. It's the mushy baby food thing.
Totally. I think that's a surprising fact to a lot of people, that baby birds don't eat seeds. Almost no birds feed their young seeds. I think the exception to that in North America are goldfinches. And they're cool because they nest later in the season because that's when the seed heads get ripe. So there's actually some seeds to feed their young. But everyone else is feeding caterpillars. And from Doug Tallamy's work, who sent graduate students out and had them counting the number of species of caterpillars found on plants, there is a strong relationship between that caterpillar diversity and natives. And, you know, we want to be able to answer questions like, if you put more natives in your yard, does that mean that the birds are going to have an easier time finding caterpillars and they'll have a more successful nest?
Right.
So that's an example of a really
Great.
Interesting question
Great.
That we'd love to answer.
So, you know, and there are, you know, applications online, many of them that you pay for, that you can kind of like plot things out in your yard, sort of, quote, design mm-hmm. programs, which are different from this. And this is free, we should say. It's not
totally.
You're not charged to use the tools. You know, it's so different and so powerful. And so I'm confessing out loud on the air now that I wanted especially to talk to you selfishly because I want to do better at it. And it's got so many layers. You know, it's so powerful, and you've just added even more. So, for instance, I thought, you know, when I made my garden 30 years ago, and it's a couple of acres, and the intention was for birds, and I think I've done well with that. But with some of the new tools you've added recently, these planning tools that you've layered on to this platform, I found out that there were some things that I wasn't even doing, and it was sort of reminded me of things that I could maybe bump up the volume on. So can we kind of talk about how the tool in turn teaches me and sort of like taps me on the shoulder as I do certain actions? It gives me a little more nudge in one direction or another.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. So the planning tool that you're talking about is brand spanking new, just released at the beginning of October. And what that does is once you create a map inside the application, it runs a bunch of calculations behind the scenes. So analyzing the map that you created to see what kinds of actions you've already taken and what kinds of wildlife those specific actions are known to support or we suspect those actions support. And there's a couple of other things in there about green infrastructure, like how are you managing water on the site as well that we calculate actions for. And so you can open up that planning tool and see, oh, look, here's the actions that these guys say I've already taken, and those appear as checked off. And it gives a list of the actions that you might still consider taking on your site in order to further work towards supporting birds or supporting dragonflies or supporting amphibians using the property that you're mapping. And you can then opt in to setting those goals for yourself, like, okay, I'm going to go out and I'm going to plant a new evergreen tree this year, or I really need to plant something with a food source for birds. So those are that's the level of specificity that we're talking at.
Yeah, that it kind of right away, even before it gives you kind of that pie chart of what percent of lawn you have versus, you know, more diverse things, and it gives you again, like, unlike just a straight design program where you're just laying down the shapes and saying, oh, I'm going to put the tulips over here, I'm going to put the lilac over there, you know, and it's just the, quote, polygons and nothing more. I mean, it's from purely aesthetic. It, again, constantly kind of reminds me to go deeper. And I thought I knew my place well. But what I'm fascinated about this tool, this platform, what really fascinates me about it and why I want to get better at using it and now after our conversation, you know, kind of run home and dig back in and get better. And by the way, there are some great tutorials on the website that goes along with Habitat Network. You know, there are getting started sort of tutorials and stuff that I'll give people the links to. But, you know, I want those... I want the education as much as a sort of feel good about, like, oh, look, I'm doing better. I've got this, you know, together. I've got more of my percentage of natives, whatever, things that make you feel good. And then I'm participating in citizen science. I'm also kind of getting hooked on what I'm learning, you know, from you.
The feedback.
Yeah. And then
well, think about it. You put so much effort into your garden that you come to think of it one way. I bought my first house a couple of years ago. And I mapped it, of course. That would be weird if I hadn't.
Yeah, that would be really weird.
Yeah, I sort of was like, wow, look at all this space. Like, I'm going to do gardens. And I had, you know, I put tons of effort into it, too, planting new natives. And then, the map, just like what you're talking about, I was like, oh, my gosh, I have a lot of impervious landscape. Like, that big asphalt driveway and the footprint and the brick patio, so much of my property isn't anything else. It's just this. And it inspired me to make the decision to put an impervious driveway in. And, you know, watching that number change and being able to see it in pie chart form was an outstanding learning experience. It's just a different lens for you to look at your yard through a really objective one.
It really is, because when you're in it, when you're physically in it, you know, sitting on your patio or you're walking around or you're doing whatever you're doing, it's really experiential in a different way. It's all the senses and so forth. And it's not analytical. You're not really assessing and calculating and quantifying. And this lets you do that. So for a lot of people, I think what they'll see is how much turf, which is monoculture of not valuable, not diverse, not insect feeding, not bird feeding. Now have I made lawns sound terrible, folks? that was a terrible condemnation.
No, we're not anti-law.
No, at all. It serves a great purpose as a traffic, you know, to move from place to place and so forth. But what you see right away when you map your landscape is how much percent is devoted to something that doesn't do what you were talking about before, like make baby caterpillars happen for baby birds to eat. It doesn't do that. It can't do that. You know, it has no relationships like that to our native beneficial insects and pollinators and so on and so forth. So that's a real, it got me excited. And that's the part that I want to just kind of dig deeper into. In the last, like, you know, 3-4 minutes, what I wanted to talk about was some of the sort of wonderful maps that have been created. I know you said there's more than 20,000 of them, but like there's one family that bought a house with, I think it's in Massachusetts, with like an in-ground pool, and they decided to like take out the pool and fill it in, and now they have a meadow instead, and they tell their story. There's one in Wisconsin, I think it was, in Wisconsin, where they really did an amazing job in explaining their whole journey. I guess what I'm getting at is there's sort of this community you can learn from other mappers dimension to it. Yes?
Absolutely. That's one of the things that's really important to us, is giving people the opportunity to see how many people out there are already doing these things. In some ways, that's more important to getting these behaviors to spread through communities than just throwing information at people. And so we do our best to tell those stories in the form of featured sites. And, you know, if you have a great property, we'll probably hunt you down if you map it and ask you to be a featured site, but you can also nominate yourself. And to be an example for people, I imagine there's a lot of people who listen to this podcast who are already really good at this stuff. And we would love to roll open the welcome mat for them, because there's folks out there who are new to gardening or who are buying new houses, millennials, who are taking that first step, who need models, who need to know what's worked for people and be inspired by others who've had great successes. And so it's a really critical part for us.
Are people all over the country doing it? Are you finding?
Over the country. We've got a group in Nature Canada is working with us to promote the project up north.
Okay.
So we're seeing more and more Canadian sites coming in, and it's open to anyone anywhere in the world. We don't have the expertise on staff to write content that applies to everywhere in the world yet. So most of the researchers are North America focused, but you can map anywhere. So if you know what you want to plant or you just want to participate in the project, you're welcome to get on from any place in the country, the Southwest, California, Northeast, Canada, Mexico, doesn't matter.
And so just final question, last minute, the Nature Conservancy connection that you've made, and that's really a new thing, the partnership that turned Yard Map sort of into the Habitat Network. What are the advantages of that?
The Nature Conservancy is a great organization. They've really got their hearts in the right place when it comes to conservation and science. And so they've looked to us to help them build out their efforts in urban areas. It's a new focal point for them. You probably know them as people who work hard to preserve wild spaces. Now they're trying to move into urban territories and start thinking about important conservation activity in these more densely populated places. And they're doing that in partnership with us. So we've got focal cities, Boston, Philadelphia, and Washington, D.C. are sort of pilot projects for us. So there's a lot of on-the-ground effort, and that's something they bring to the table that the Cornell Lab of Ornithology doesn't have, is this huge network across the country and even the world of people working in particular places on the ground. So we're marrying up with them to build out our own ability to reach folks across the country.
Well, I'm excited about it, and I'm so glad to speak to you, Dr. Rhiannon Crane, of the Habitat Network, and it's habitat.network is the URL. I'll give lots more information with the transcript, and I hope to speak to you again soon. Thank you so much for taking the time.
The pleasure is all mine.
And thanks to all of you for tuning in, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version on Stitcher or iTunes. You can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or facebook.com/awaytogarden. And happy habitat mapping meantime.
Away to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.